we talk to our young men all the time about, you know, things as simple as how to do a handshake, or, you know, how to act if you have done something wrong, or how to be humble if you do something right, and, you know, how I think and how our coaches think they should talk with women, and how they should treat other people who may not have the privileges they have, and those type of lessons. But the big lessons that we always are pushing is hard work and accountability.
I'm not afraid to say that I think everyone should be allowed into the playoffs for a few different reasons. Number one, so that every team, every kid gets that opportunity to prepare for a playoff game. You know, things change when it becomes a playoff stage.
And that's a Duff Said. This is episode 33 of A Duff Said. I'm your host, Duff Tyler. Thank you so much for hitting the play button on your favorite listening device of choice from wherever you listen to podcasts. Special thanks if you're listening to this at aduffsaid.com. You can find every episode of this podcast as well as other great content. All you got to do is go to aduffsaid.com. Now, I have got a jam-packed show lined up for you this week. Coming up, we'll hear from this week's featured guest, Joe Spencer. He is the head football coach at Swartz Creek. Now, it's been quite a turnaround his Dragons are enjoying this year. He'll stop by to break down how they've done it. Freeland is riding a 3-game winning streak heading into Bridgeport tomorrow night. Head coach Kevin Townsend will stop by to talk about last week's thrilling win over Swan Valley and the Falcons' chances at a conference title. And later, Lake Orion head football coach John Blackstock is back this week to talk about his Dragons. They're hoping to bounce back from last week's 31-7 loss to Clarkston. Now here's someone else who's here to talk about that game. It is the Wolves head coach Kurt Richardson, and that conversation starts now. Friday's win is now in the past, but how good did it feel to go into Lake Orion last Friday night and bring home the Backyard Brawl trophy to Clarkston?
Well, you know, I've got a lot of respect for Orion and their kids and their coaching staff, and you know, our kids wanted it pretty bad after being embarrassed last year, so felt pretty good.
How much of last season was in your guys' mind as you took the field on Friday night?
Well, all week long, our theme was 55-21, 55-21, which was a score last week. So we drilled it home pretty hard.
You guys are now 4-0 and ranked fourth in the state in Division I. Now you have the Free Press and other publications saying that Clarkston is back to being a powerhouse. Now, how have your guys responded to all that attention that they've been getting?
Well, you know, we talk about, you know, not paying attention to that stuff, and you got to play the game, you know, in between the lines and not on the paper, and whether they say good, bad, or otherwise, just kind of block it out and play the game.
Aiden Brooks filled in for Ethan Clark at running back. He scores 4 touchdowns for you in that game. How pleased were you to see him step up and make a huge impact?
Well, Brooks is a great kid, and you know, he's always, I mean, we've moved him around defensively and stuff, and he's always willing to do what's best for the team. So, yeah, it was cool seeing him have such a great night.
What was it like to have that conversation with him when you told him that he was going to shoulder most of the load carrying the football for you guys?
Well, we weren't even sure until Friday night what was going to happen. I mean, Michael Hine started and did a good job, and then Brooksy came in at, seems like, key times, and you know, he got all the touchdowns.
Now Brooks is one of your seniors this year, and he had family members on both sides of the field cheering him on in that game. But what's it been like for you to watch him play from the sidelines and just have the opportunity to coach him for the last 4 years?
Well, I didn't know he had people on both sets of bleachers, but he's been a great kid to coach. Very you know, not worried about himself. He's all about the team, and he's just a great kid, always having fun.
Could we see him have more games like this in the future?
We'll have to wait and see.
Now, sophomore running back Ethan Clark has been dealing with an ankle injury for the last couple of weeks. What is his status for?
We're going to have to wait and see on that, too. He just wants to play.
What's been the one thing that you've seen out of your guys that you've been really satisfied with up to this point?
Their work ethic has been very good. All during the question mark period and everything else, their work ethic has been outstanding.
You guys are facing 3-1 Birmingham Seaholm this Friday night. How do you match up with the Maples?
They're a good football team. They rely mostly on the run. They're big up front. I think their offensive and defensive fronts are their strength. So that's our strength. So, man, it should be interesting.
What are some things that you feel that you're going to have to look out for in order to be successful on Friday night?
We can't let them just control the clock. We can't let them just, 3 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards, 4 yards, 3 yards. First down will be real important.
Kurt Richardson of the Clarkston Wolves. The Wolves are 4-0 heading into this Friday night's matchup with Birmingham Seaholm. Coach, thank you so much for making the time this week on the Clarkston Report.
Well, thanks for having me.
Up next, Swartz Creek has a brand new stadium, and they're hosting a huge game tomorrow night. Their head coach, Joe Spencer, stops by to break it down. Matt Patricia says he's working hard for Detroit.
Trying to do the best I can to help this team win.
But let's look at his body of work. He replaced a coach with a winning record. But in 2+ seasons, Patricia has just one more win than Jim Caldwell had in his last year in Detroit.
The biggest thing for us, really, be consistent. I think that's what we got to do, is we got to be consistent.
Consistent? The Lions have blown double-digit leads in 10 games dating back to 2019. They're winless in 9 of those games.
I don't really think it's the same thing over, though.
Detroit has lost 14 of its last 16 games. The Lions are as bad as they were before Matthew Stafford arrived. They are the same old Lions.
Yeah, I think when I came to Detroit, there was a lot of work to do, and that's what we're trying to do.
Matt Patricia, wrong for the Lions, wrong for Detroit. Duff Tyler and Duff's Football Minute are responsible for the content of this scathing report of Matt Patricia. I am joined now by a man who is in his 5th season as the head football coach at Swartz Creek. The Dragons are 3-1, and they've got a huge conference showdown tonight with undefeated Fenton at their brand new stadium. Here to tell us about that and so much more is Joe Spencer. When we first met in August, I had a chance to talk to your guys. It was the first week of practice. Everybody was really excited, and then the news came down that they were going to put a stop to the season until the spring. When you had to break the news to the guys, what was their reaction?
Well, it's kind of funny. We hadn't been practicing that day, so most of the news had to get broken over text messages and phone calls and things like that. But it was quite a bit of disappointment, especially amongst the seniors, because they had already, been having such a strange spring. And, clearly there was a lot of disappointment. And I think a lot of people in our community, parents and grandparents and stuff, they were just all very disappointed. We tried to make it a teachable moment for them. It was out of our hands at that point.
So when the decision comes that we are going to have football in the fall, how excited were your guys to get back after it?
Very excited. Another kind of funny quirk of the schedule was that they had briefly put together a plan for a spring season, and they were allowing us some workout dates, and we were just trying it out. It was like our first one. And during that workout, I got, an email, and then everybody started blowing up my phone that, hey, we're going to do this thing for real. And so that was actually a cool experience, because we were all together and I got to call them in and we explained it, and they were all jumping around and, flexing their biceps and stuff. It was pretty fun.
That was definitely a flex moment, because I'm sure that the thing that they were most excited about was the fact that they were going to get to play on your new stadium's turf. You guys got a new stadium, and you gave me a tour of the place this past summer. I got to tell you, you got an amazing new field out there at Swartz Creek. I know the guys were really excited about it. When I was talking to them, they were telling me that they were taking bike rides, they were walking up to it, and just kind of staring and looking at that new stadium, just picturing what it would be like to put on their Swartz Creek uniform and run out onto the field and get a chance to play on that new surface that you guys got out there. And so when you finally get the chance last week to play at home in front of your fans at the new stadium, what was that experience like?
Yeah, it's tremendous. It was almost, for me, it was almost like surreal in a way. It's like we weren't even at the same place, you know. Nothing was the same as it was before. We flipped sidelines and everything was new. And you know, some of the stuff is still being constructed. So we weren't quite able to get the full usage out of like our team rooms and things like that yet. But just the game was amazing. You know, it was a beautiful night for football when we got to finally play out there. I tell you, it's amazing. I think, you know, the people at Swartz Creek, when they decided that they wanted to build this thing, I think they made it, you know, one of the best decisions that they could. It's a multi-sport surface, and it's right there by the school. So it creates such a great atmosphere, and the scoreboard is state of the art, and the surface is anywhere in the county. And, you know, it was just really fun to be on. To me, honestly, practice, almost a bigger dent in our practice. We can be so much more game-like in the things that we're doing with all the markings and the surface being set, you know, so nice. And it's really made an efficient practice for us as well, which is, I think, a big benefit.
And most importantly of all, you guys go out and you get the win over Flushing to open up the new stadium. I'm just curious, in the week leading up to that game, how many times did your guys have a discussion about how, hey, this is our first game, and we can't go out and lose to open up the new stadium?
Yeah, you know what? Quite honestly, we didn't talk about it. You know, we hadn't, you know, we kind of have a couple of program things that, you know, we kind of follow a philosophy that it's all about us, and of course we scout the other team and we respect everybody, but we like to say that we would play a nameless, faceless opponent on Fridays. So of course we talk about doing our job, and we talk about if we do our job, the score will take care of itself, things like that. But, you know, we didn't really focus on hey, we got to win, or hey, we got to beat this particular team, because we just want to make it all about the process. And I'm sure that the kids are thinking these things in the back of their mind, but, you know, we try to really focus on having a culture where we just take care of our job and don't worry about, you know, things you can't control. And one of the things you can't control is the other team, right? So, you know, I think that's probably one of the things I'm most proud of about our program, is that the kids over the last few years have gone out and generally speaking have performed in games that maybe historically Swartz Creek teams wouldn't have. And I'd like to think part of that is because we don't worry about who is our opponent. You know, our biggest opponent is the guy in the mirror, if that makes sense.
Fenton is coming to your place, and you guys get more fans in the stands for this one. What kind of atmosphere are you expecting this Friday night?
I think it's going to be definitely a louder stadium than it was last time. You know, we're lamenting the fact that we don't have the ability to go full capacity, because we think we might have found out just what that number might be. But it's going to be cool. The band will be back. The cheerleaders, the seniors got some more tickets. And, you know, there's going to be more people. Just, I think it'll make it, you know, a little more of a varsity football environment maybe than the first couple of weeks. But, you know, I think what I'm excited about is the opportunity for our kids to play in, you know, meaningful games late in the season. And we talked today, you know, I just left practice. We talked today about how from here on every game is big, you know, and so it just continue to focus on our process. And we're really excited to be playing in meaningful games later in the season, especially when you think back 6-7 weeks ago, you know, or 2 months ago, we weren't even sure if we were going to play. So this is really fun.
And you're taking a three-game winning streak into this game on Friday night. And last week was probably your most dominant performance of the season. You guys got a shutout over Holly, 20-0. What pleased you most about that game?
The kids, you know, what pleased me the most, honestly, about the last 3 weeks in general, but last week in particular, was that we've got guys stepping up. You know, our school has been going face-to-face, and we've lost some players to, like, quarantining, and we've lost, you know, we lost a couple of JV games because of one positive test down at that level. And, you know, we haven't had any varsity football players or coaches test positive, but we've had some of them got quarantined because of contact tracing, and we haven't shown any symptoms or anything like that, but it's just the protocols that the health department has recommended that our district is following. So we lost our top two leading rushers last week, and we had lost some starters on defense, you know, games before. But we opportunities for guys to step up were there, and we had some younger guys or less experienced guys really step up. And we didn't put together a complete game. I don't think we've done that yet, but we did pretty well, I think, considering the circumstances of getting some young guys in there and creating a little depth and competition at some spots. So I was really proud of the way that our guys overcame that adversity. And we're hoping that it pays dividends for us moving forward, having had to, you know, kind of go through some tribulations.
I'd like to touch base with you now on the fact that Swartz Creek has been in the news because of the positive COVID tests. How have your guys responded to that, knowing that that's a very serious situation? And we talked about it earlier this year. That's something that could definitely impact the season. What are some of the things that these guys have done to respond to that news and to just keep themselves safe?
Yeah, of course we take all precautions, you know, at practice and at school. I mean, our school district, I think we made the decision to offer face-to-face learning, and a lot of kids have taken that opportunity. But we've all known, I think in all school districts and in all athletic programs, I think we've all known that there, you know, this is a risky time, and so we've done as much as we can to safely mitigate those risks, you know. And We've purchased face shields, and we do masks and hand sanitizing and social distancing and all that. But I think, you know, having known that this was a possibility, we've talked about it, and there's been teachable moments, you know, to kind of remind the kids that you really got to go hard out there, because you just don't know, you know, when something might out of your control might happen and you might not get to play. And the kids, I think, by and large, have been very resilient with that. But, of course, for those that have had to miss time, especially since they weren't sick, you know, it's been a struggle, but we try to tell them it's a teachable moment for life. You know, you can only control what you can control. And the guys have played really hard for each other, especially if their teammates haven't been around. You know, they've really taken, you know, a team atmosphere, and you know, we kind of preach everybody does their job. And I think whether you could play in the game or not, these guys really rallied around the you know, the central core idea that we're all in this thing for the same goals, and I'm proud of them for doing that.
When you talk about teachable moments, one of the things that you do try to instill in your guys is the culture of accountability and hard work. And obviously they've had to do that with regards to keeping themselves safe during this time of the pandemic. And they've also had to apply that on the football field. But how did you get your guys to buy into that philosophy?
Well, we've been kind of attacking that for years from various directions, but we've had success with this group and by starting early. And we had a meeting last year early on in the off season, you know, right around early November. And we just kind of we laid it all out and just said, listen, these are the things that we have to do to be successful. And we talked about our roadmap right from the beginning. And we've really pushed hard for kids to think about, you know, what they put in their bodies, how they respond to coaching and how they respond to criticism, how they interact with each other, even things like how they speak to themselves. You know, we've just chipped away at it, and we try really hard to build relationships with every kid in our program, so that when we have to coach them hard, they know we still love them. And we talk about things like that. We talk about, hey, like, if we didn't care about you, then we wouldn't tell you to do the little things right every time. And the more we send them that message, I think the more it sinks in. But it takes leadership from the kids. You know, it takes, especially we talk about seniors a lot, but it doesn't have to be a senior. It takes kids buying in, and we remind them constantly that when they go out on that field, we coaches can't go with them. They have to have a culture where they can have leadership and accountability when we're not there. And slowly over time, we really developed some good seniors and honestly, quite a few juniors and even some sophomores that are really taken to that message, you know. And I think honestly, it's a credit to the kids because it's not easy, you know. It's football's tough and accountability's tough, and then they, you know, then there's a pandemic. That's a even unusual or more unusual circumstances. So I'm proud of the way they responded to that, and we're not there all the way yet. You know, this process will continue to play out over the next few weeks, and we'll see how it goes.
When you talk about the process, obviously kids have to trust the process. It doesn't happen overnight. And a good example of that is how things went for you guys last year. You came into 2019 as a playoff team, but then you finished that season 1-8. You had a roster of juniors and sophomores. What had to change with this team in order to get them from where they were to where they are now in a position where they are competing for a league title?
Yeah, the thing that we focused on, of course, the culture that we just discussed, but we really tried to put a tremendous emphasis on off-season training. You know, we pushed all of our kids to get in that weight room, and we kind of revamped the way we did the weight room. We put a tremendous amount of our culture into the way that they would start and finish their workouts, and we pushed kids to things like powerlifting and track and field to try and develop these different athletic skills. And the process that we talk about, of course, is a mental process, but it's also a process of becoming a better athlete year round. And, you know, that can take a year or two or three, but if kids continue to get in that weight room and play multiple sports, you know, we believe that will make us a good unit. And of course, every day that we're in there doing weights or whether we're doing a powerlifting competitions or we're running a track meet, although we really lost that last year, we talk about how this impacts their overall development and how they can take the skills we're teaching them in football and in weightlifting and apply it to their real life. And I think, you know, as young men mature, they start to find opportunities to either do that or not. And I think hopefully they're doing those things and seeing results in places like their homes and their relationships with their family and friends and their jobs. And so that's our real ultimate goal, is to get them to connect what we say to them about football and the process that it takes to be a good human.
Coming into Friday's game, you're taking on a Fenton Tigers team that is 4-0 this season. What kind of challenge are you expecting from the Tigers?
Yeah, they're a very good football program. You know, they're probably the team that in the last, I'd say, 10 years has had the most success in this league. They're always a tough team to beat. But, you know, I'm going to go back to what we talked about earlier. We know some things about them, and they certainly know some things about us, but we still believe that this game's going to come down to, can we take care of our job? You know, and that's all we can ask our players to do. You know, we don't ask them to do something that they're not capable of doing, but if they do their job, what we call our 1/11th, if everybody out there does their 1/11th on every play as hard as they can and executes, then we feel we'll be okay. And, you know, I tell stories to the kids all the time about how if you just know exactly what your job's supposed to be and you do it to the full capability that you're able, that's all I can ask you to do. And so we really hope that the kids go out there and take that mindset on every rep. And if we do, I think we'll be all right.
Who are some of the guys that we need to look out for on your roster?
Well, we've got several guys who are in leadership positions. Casey Lanigan is a senior playing tackle for us, who's been around and has been a strong leader. You know, he makes a lot of calls for us, and we rely on him for his leadership up front. We've also got a couple other seniors on the offensive line, Brad Slenzek at center. We've got Ian Holtz at guard and Trenton Carrillo at guard. These are guys that have worked their whole high school career to get this opportunity. And so, you know, we expect them to go out there and have a solid game. We're getting back a couple of senior running backs in Brennan Larian and Noah Calique. That these guys are guys that have been in the program. I think they're both 3-year players, a lot of carries. So they're going to bring some experience in a little bit, hopefully, of oomph to that backfield. We've got everybody on defense right now is playing really well. Not that we really don't have a standout. We kind of joke that we're just the nameless defense out there because we just got about 13 or 14 guys. Many of them are younger sophomores and a lot of juniors that we can rotate in on defense and just, you know, kind of go do your job, you know. So we're really excited about the possibilities of what we can do on defensively. And honestly, we think a big key to the game is we got a senior kicker and Luke Johnson, who's come through with some big kicks for us this year and putting the ball in the end zone on kickoff. So we really like that aspect of our game right now. My personality is such that I kind of like the fact that we've got a stable of guys, and on any given night, it might be somebody else's night.
What would it mean to this group if they were able to pull out a win against a Fenton team, like you said, that's had so much success over the years?
I think it would certainly get gratification for all their hard work. This is a unique year, and we've talked about this from the start, because unlike some years, you don't really know if you're getting into the playoffs or whatever. You know, these guys know they're playing beyond the league schedule this year. So they're gonna have a second life no matter what. And we hope that in some ways that kind of reinforces the process doesn't stop, you know. But also, I think this is a tremendous opportunity for us to show what we can do against a good football program. It's not life or death, but it is a tremendous opportunity.
When we first met, you told me that you are coaching the greatest game on earth. When did you first discover this passion that you have for the sport of football, and what ultimately led to you coaching it?
Yeah, I played football. You know, I can't really remember when I fell in love with football. That's a great question. You know, I played in high school, and you know, I can remember playing like flag football as a kid, but I couldn't tell you when we started. You know, I grew up in Flushing, just up the road, and my high school coach was Bob Buckle, who was a very good coach and a very good human. And he and some of the coaches, I think, probably definitely left a legacy that I was interested in following. And then when I got my degree, I ended up getting hired at Swords Creek, and they were kind of like, hey, we're looking for somebody. And I ended up coaching at the middle school, you know, right off the bat. I was pretty green and didn't really know anything, but I figured, hey, I'll give it a shot. Slowly over time, I've been extremely lucky. I've been mentored by some tremendous football coaches, some at Swords Creek, some I've sought out and made relationships with in various ways. But, you know, I've been really lucky that I've been able to find some guys that were willing to mentor me and show me some things about how good programs go about their business and things. You know, guys like Bob Schlosky, who's the Hall of Famer, is a good friend of mine. And, you know, I've had great conversations with guys like John Shillito over at Zeeland West or Gus Capolka over at Cedar Springs recently. And there's too many others to name, but just guys that have really helped me learn about this game and the way that they went about their business. And, you know, sometimes I disagree with them, but it's really nice to have someone to bounce ideas off. And, you know, so I'm really lucky in that regard. I just really, you know, my passion is for having these guys go out there and become great young men. And we've got a lot of success stories in that realm. And I think the game of football is the great game in the world because it takes so much hard work to be good at it, but it also takes so much teamwork to be good at it, you know. And that's the thing I like the best, is we create successful teams in football, and we're the ultimate team sport, in my opinion. And that is just so good to go out there, and for two hours, that is just a really special time for me to go out there and work with those young men. And a lot of them have been calling me this week, especially, but all throughout the season, and asking, hey, is there an extra ticket, or I really want to see you guys play, or good luck, or whatever. And it's really a cool thing. I've been in Swords Creek now for 17 years. This is my fifth year as a head coach, and the people that come back and want to be a part of it, it's amazing how football can bring together a community. And so that's just really cool.
What's it been like to build those relationships, not just with the players, but the community as a whole?
Yeah, that's the best. I mean, that's the most exciting part, I think, of my job. My role is that you get to build these relationships, first off, with the kids, because it's really, I tell our coaches all the time that, you know, what we're really doing is trying to build these young men into grown men, you know, and that football's a big step in their path for a lot of them. And of course, you try to build relationships with parents and siblings and things like that, and that can be a lot of fun. Or sometimes, you know, parents have a little bit of disagreement, which is, you know, a lot of people, you know, fear that aspect of coaching, but I kind of take an approach that I have an open door. And so far I feel like that served me pretty well, but it's really great when I get calls or texts or social media things from kids that we've had in the past and see their successes. You know, I'll get guys texting me and they'll say, "Hey, can I use you as a job reference?" You know, I'm like, "Of course you can." And, you know, I get calls from big companies or, you know, important businesses outside the community even. And it's really exciting for me to see these opportunities for the guys that have gone through our program. And, you know, Swartz Creek is very much a small town in a lot of ways. So it can be a lot of fun to see the community come together.
You've been able to build so many relationships with these guys, but there comes a time when they're no longer a part of the program and they have to graduate and they move on from the Swartz Creek football team. But what is something that you hope they take with them that you have applied to their everyday life?
There's a lot of stuff, and we talk all the time about things I think I've already mentioned a lot of so far in this conversation, but things like being accountable. And things like, you know, we try to have little lessons and teachable moments as they come up. And sometimes I strategize, but we talk to our young men all the time about, you know, things as simple as how to do a handshake or, you know, how to act if you have done something wrong or how to be humble if you do something right. And, you know, how I think and how our coaches think they should talk with women and how they should treat other people who may not have the privileges they have, and those type of lessons. But the big lessons that we always are pushing is hard work and accountability and trust in the process. And I think that is a tremendous life lesson that anyone could benefit from. And so when we see these guys have success, we do like to feel a little small part of it, you know.
He is Joe Spencer, the head football coach at Swartz Creek. The Dragons are at home tomorrow night against Fenton. Coach, best of luck to you and the Dragons tomorrow night on your home turf.
Well, thanks so much for having me and letting me throw a little bit of pride about our culture out there. And I really appreciate all you do for local kids and communities.
It is my pleasure, sir. And I hope we can do this again real soon. Thank you so much for making the time this week.
Absolutely. Thank you again, and the best of luck to you.
Up next, the Freeland Falcons are flying high into Bridgeport. These are not the same old Cleveland Browns.
Browns on the move left to right. Mayfield again will pass. Going to fling it into the end zone. Wide open. It's Rashard Higgins for a touchdown. 15-yard pass, the second of the afternoon by Baker Mayfield.
But this past Sunday, Phillip Rivers continued to do Phillip Rivers things.
Rivers backs a throw on third and four. Has time. Throws upfield, and it's intercepted. Picked off by Ronnie Harrison, and he's going to go the other way, and that's going to be a pick six for the Browns.
And that was just the beginning.
Taylor Rivers steps up, gets out of a sack. He's going to heave it downfield, and it's intercepted at the 45-yard line. Rivers in his end zone, going to heave it way downfield, and no one's there. Was feeling pressure in the end zone. In all reality, nobody was there for the Colts.
Intentional grounding,
yep.
On the offense, number 17. Under pressure, nobody in the area. That's going to be a safety.
A pick six and a safety by Rivers gave the Browns 9 points. The 9 points that was the margin of victory in their 32-23 win over the Colts. Now that's twice this year that old man Rivers has thrown ill-timed interceptions that have led to Indy losses. Now is anyone really surprised by this? I mean, we saw this act last season in his final year with the Chargers. Now the Colts are currently 3-2, but Rivers' performance after just 5 games has Indy fans wanting Jacoby Brissett to take the snaps. Now, head coach Frank Reich has already said that's not happening. Now, Rivers can likely get away with this over the next few weeks. The Colts are, after all, facing the Bengals and the Lions. But next month, they will open up a portion of their schedule where they will see Baltimore, Green Bay, and Tennessee twice. Now, Indy has all the pieces in place to be a contender. They're solid defensively, and they have a respectable ground game to go with their dominant O-line. These are things that Andrew Luck did not have in his time there. But he's not coming back, and Rivers has to stop redistributing the ball and points to the opposition. If he can't, the Colts are likely spending the playoffs at home again this year, despite the price that they paid for Rivers.
Dadgummit!
Dadgummit, indeed. Here now to talk about the Freeland Falcons is the man who has been their head coach for the last 15 years, Kevin Townsend. So you are coming off a win over your rival, Swan Valley. You guys won over them last Friday, 21-14. This snapped a losing streak that dated back to 2016. What was it like on the sidelines when the win was finally secured and the losing streak was over and the trophy was back in your guys' hands?
Yeah, again, I mean, you know, it's a rivalry, and it's gotten to be one that's extremely competitive and physical, and they've had the upper hand on us the last 3 years. We beat them 3 years in a row before that. But, you know, they had a special group that came through in 2017 that went to, Ford Field, where they lost that. So that was a tough group for anybody to beat. And then the next year, they had a lot of those kids back. So we knew we had our hands full with them. They've got a young squad this year with a lot of juniors on it, and as well do we. So, you know what, it was a close game. You kind of could have went either way at the end. They had a chance to score to tie it up. But, Carter Supas stepped in and made a great play as a senior. And that's what, you know, kind of my preach to those boys each night is to be a senior. You know, it's your night, and how do you want to remember this game? And, you know, for Carter Supas, who didn't get to play a lot in the game, he plays on special teams a lot for us. So for him to come up with that interception, still, you know, a minute 17 or so to go, I think, when he had the interception, and we ran the ball a couple times. And I was saying take a knee, and Bryson was saying to take a knee, but the referee kept telling somebody to run one more play, and we didn't. So, again, once we got to that point and Bryson was able to take the knee, it was celebration time from then on out.
I have heard in Freeland that anytime you beat Swan Valley, it's going to be a great weekend. And certainly you guys did that. But for some of your guys on the team, this is the only win they'll ever get to enjoy over Swan Valley. How good did it feel to see those guys finally get the Mountain Trophy?
Yeah, and that, again, that's what we talk about. You know, the reality check of it, if you go across the state of Michigan and find, you know, I guess interview all the head football coaches and see how many kids they're sending off to college to continue playing, that percentage is not very high. So we are always using, you know, kind of the slogan of high school sports are about memories. And, you know, for those seniors to be able to get that, we've only got 10 seniors, you know, for them to be able to get that win is something that nobody will ever take away from them. You know, we have conversations of games, where we've beaten Swan Valley before on a 2-point conversion at the end of the game, or, you know, things like that, or where they've beaten us by a touchdown, to ruin our undefeated season. And those are stories that, like I said, nobody will ever be able to take away from those kids, on both sides of the ball. So for the rest of eternity, this senior class will always, be 1-0 their senior year against Swan Valley.
Because of the schedule, this was your last regular season home game. Now, the consensus is that you guys should be the home team for multiple playoff games, but for those 10 seniors that are on your team and the ones that got to suit up this past Friday night, what was this like for them to get it on their final regular season home game, and what did these guys mean to your program?
Again, you know, teaching seventh grade, I've had these kids in school, with an exception of Cole Weesey, who moved here his sophomore year. You know, I taught all these kids in seventh grade, so I've seen them, you know, mature and grow. You know, Zachary, my middle boy, holds the school record in the 110 hurdles. And when he was in varsity track, our middle school track team would be out there. And I remember him having a conversation with Easton Armstrong as an eighth grader and telling Easton that you'll break my school record one day if you keep working, because of his technique and form as an eighth grade hurdler. So again, I've seen these kids grow up, you know, over the last 6 years, and obviously all those boys on my team are family to me. I want the best for every single one of them. So to be able to get that, you know, we talked about, you know, multiple things before that game, and number one was to win. And by winning, you get to secure the trophy. So that was kind of like, you know, icing on top of the cake. Then with that win, you put yourself in a share of a conference championship. So, you know, a conference championship with an asterisk, because obviously Frankie Booth and stuff isn't in our conference, but you can give me, you know, a state championship and put an asterisk if you want to next to it. I don't really care. So, well, you know, it gave them that. And now, you know, we get to control our own destiny when we play this week, obviously, and next week with John Glenn to remain undefeated in the conference. You know, as far as home playoff games, we knew this win would give us at least one, you know, if not two or three. But our schedule isn't as tough as record-wise, I guess you could say, as Garber's is. If Garber is able to beat Swan Valley this week, they could end up being the number one seed, but we don't get to control those things. All we do is, you know, play Bridgeport on Friday, play John Glenn the following Friday, and then, you know, let the pieces fall where they may.
And I certainly want to get into all that in just a second, but getting back to your seniors real quick, for those 10 guys that are on your team, aside from the memories, what are some things that you hope that you've taught them that they'll take with them further in life?
Just that, you know, football is the game of life and everything that it goes through. You know, if we have a kid who doesn't show up to practice, you know, somebody has to do their job. If a kid misses work later on in life, somebody has to do their job. It doesn't just stop, you know, there. Just the counting on one another, you know, as seniors, you know, looking out for each other. When there's 10 of them, we talk about these juniors, and we have one sophomore. About them playing for these seniors because these seniors don't get another chance. I talked, you know, to kids like Ben Wellnitz, who is his dad's only son. And so it's kind of that boy's last chance to win a championship for his father. Cole Weesey, same thing, you know, the last boy to come through. Easton has a younger brother still, but again, when you look at it, Cameron Chachowski, senior, didn't get to play in that game with a knee injury, so that's kind of devastating for him. So, you know, he might have on his calendar circled that we might get Swan Valley again in the playoffs, and he gets a chance back at that. But again, a younger brother. So, you know, we have Gabe Blanchard as a sophomore. Once the playoffs roll around, we'll pull some underclassmen up. Now it's their chance to be big brother. You know, to those kids, we had some younger kids, or some of the kids like Cole Weesey was a sophomore on varsity, and those seniors took him under, you know, their wing and treated him like he was a senior. So being a leader, being a mentor, you know, carrying those things on further into life, and, you know, a lot of these kids are very gifted. You know, Nolan Van Loo is looking at going into, I believe, the Naval Academy, Air Force, Coast Guard, something like that. Super smart. Easton's going to go to Michigan Tech. You know, it's a very smart, talented group. So you just hope to teach them some life skills, and, you know, maybe one of them will want to coach someday too because of whatever me and my staff have done for them.
Ben Wellnitz was a unique story for you guys because this was somebody that got injured in last year's playoff run. And then when the season got underway with practices, and then for a little bit, the season got put on hold until next spring, he wasn't sure if he was going to get to play football, so he went over to play soccer, and he actually had a goal for the Falcons boys soccer team, but then football is put back on the docket, and you guys get to play a portion of the schedule that you had made for this year, so he's back on the team. How thrilled were you that he actually did get that chance to have his senior season with you guys?
Again, you know, elated with it. You know, like you say, he came to me, well, when our season got canceled or put on pause, if you will, I told everybody on the team, you go compete, especially if you're a senior. Go play soccer, go run cross country, something, but go compete because you're not guaranteed a winter season or a spring season. So if soccer is still in season, and they didn't have a season yet, he was just going to go over there with a chance that they were going to be able to play. You know, so he went over there and he played. Like you said, in his second game, he actually scored a goal. I think he had two goals that game. But one of them, somebody was offside, so I got waved off. you know, I didn't want to be the person to tell him to not go play soccer because I wasn't, you know, we weren't guaranteed to have a football season. So for me to go over and tell him we can't, you know, we can't play, that wouldn't have been fair. And then he misses out on a soccer season because I didn't want to give him, I wanted to be selfish and keep him for myself. So he goes over there, plays. When football starts back up, he has to tell his soccer coach that he has to come back. And his soccer coach doesn't really even care if he comes to practice. He just wants him out of the game. So if I'm not mistaken, Ben has gone back and played two more games since football season has started.
Now, in addition to the seniors that you've had that have been successful for you, you've also gotten some really outstanding play from your junior quarterback, Bryson Huckabee. Against Swan Valley, he ran in two touchdowns, and one of those touchdowns came on an 83-yard run. Now, the running gag on your team is that he's not exactly the fastest guy on the roster, but he certainly was on Friday. And what did you make of that performance and the way he really turned on the Jets against the Vikings?
Well, again, you know, if you see Bryson played his first varsity game as a freshman, we were 5-3, played a 7-1 Frankenmuth and was able to get the win. And in that game, you see a 6'2", probably 165, 170 pound skinny kid against. Yeah. And we teased him about, you know, being quick. And then into his sophomore year, he grew a little bit more and gained a little bit more weight. But if you see Bryson this year, you know, he's 6'4", 200 pounds. He's kind of completely changing his body. He knows he's a leader on that squad. You know, we still had summer workouts where we weren't allowed to have footballs. We weren't allowed to have weight room stuff. So we worked on a lot of speed and agility stuff. Bryson didn't miss a single one of those days. So, you know, very smart kid, you know, top five in his class. And he just, he's dedicated himself to changing his body, working on quickness with his feet. And again, like I said, super smart. So on that run, he was patient, you know, followed his blockers. Their outside linebacker, who's a pretty stud dude, hit Bryson right in the legs, and Bryson was able to bounce off of it. Where, again, like I said, that kid who's 2 years younger and, you know, 30 pounds lighter as a freshman probably goes down. So it's scary of how he ran away from kids. Their corner on the opposite side of the field almost chased him down. But again, for him to be able to have those long strides and to get up on his toes and run, I don't think, like I say, too many people are going to be teasing him about how fast he can run anymore.
Really, with his arms or his legs, he's quickly become one of the top quarterbacks in all of mid-Michigan, I think at any level. What's it been like for you to see him just continue to evolve at the position?
Yeah, again, just true leader. Like I said, you watch him on the basketball court, and he's a 6'4" guard that plays in the low post but can bring the ball up the court. This week in practice, we got a few kids that are banged up. So Bridgeport has a 6'6" receiver. Put Bryson in at that receiver spot. So he's running routes and jumping and catching balls. Again, he's got a lot of different tools as an athlete. I'm sure he'd be probably an amazing baseball player too. I would like him to run track just to keep working on that speed. And I think that's the thing that, you know, will separate him from some of the guys in the league of going to the next level. You know, he has the frame, he has the size, he has the arm strength. But again, at that next level, you need that next gear. And I think Coach Drown, our varsity track coach, can teach him, you know, how to do those things. I know he's not real keen on running, but I've seen a kid like Jake Jankowska who joined track his junior year, and then his senior year he ran away from people. So, the nice thing for me is I got two regular season games with Bryson, and then who knows how many playoff games, and then I get him again next year.
Now your team is 3-1, having won 3 in a row. But take me back to that game against Frankenmuth. You guys lost that game 41-3, and that's a loss to the current top-ranked team in Division 5. So what did your guys take from that loss to get them to where they are now?
Well, you know, when you have a team like ours that's got a lot of juniors that are really good athletes, you know, in the Kingsley Regional Championship game last year, we had 9 sophomores and a freshman starting that game. And so people tell them how good they are. And again, they are a good squad, but they have to understand that they are a team, you know, that's everybody together. And in that Frankenmuth game, Phil does a really good job there, and they've got a very vicious front 7 group. Unfortunately, Andrew Korski broke his hand on the second or third play of the game as our starting center. and that really messes things up. And then we went through two more centers with that game, but make no excuses with that game. We got our butts kicked in every facet of the game, except maybe kicking field goals, because we did make a field goal there. But it humbled them, you know, in a hurry. And then they came back to work the next week against a tough Alma squad that had multiple chances to beat Swan Valley as well. And we fumbled the opening snap there, give them the ball on the 28-yard line, and they score on their first possession. And that was the only touchdown they scored that game. You know, so we're growing, we're emerging. We're on our fourth center with Cole Weesey, who had never played center before until this year. You know, some kids get jockeyed around on that offensive line. We graduated some good seniors on that offensive line. So I think that's the big thing. You know, you can have all the skill kids, which we feel we do with Alex Tooley and Jacob Kundinger and Ben Wellnitz and Nathan Levingston, of course, with Bryson and Garrett Pistro. I could go on and on with skill kids, but if that offensive line, you know, can't come together and do their job. So we go into Bridgeport or into Birch Run, and Bryson throws for 358 yards in the first half. And again, I don't care how bad one team is or another, you still have to have protection. So that really worked out well for us. And then, you know, in the Swan Valley game, you know, we only threw for 81 yards, but Bryson was 7 of 10 in that game. So, again, I think our offensive line is coming together. It's really going to make Bryson a better player. But if you talk to Bryson, he's the first kid to give, you know, all the kudos to the guys up front for protecting him.
You touched on it a moment ago. You guys are currently on top of the Tri-Valley Central standings with one game left against last place John Glenn. And you have two games left in the schedule, the other opponent being Bridgeport this Friday. What's the mood like been for your guys, knowing that you kind of control your own destiny for not only the conference title, but for those home playoff games that we talked about?
Yeah, just, you know, it's business as usual. You know, I'll tell you that you know, when we break down film on Swan Valley, we had all three of their games because, you know, they played Alma for the opening game. We played Alma week two, so we got that film. We have a league rule where they have to give us their two films. So we had all three of the films on them. I broke down every single play on every single one of those and brought all those to practice. Now we're playing Bridgeport, who's 1-3, and I bring every single play of every single clip that Bridgeport runs. We don't prepare differently. So it's just another game that's on the schedule. We're on the road. You know, we're much more comfortable at home on the turf, but we're on the road. You know, Bridgeport has got athletes with some breakaway speed, so we're going to have to be very disciplined with them. Like I told you, they have a 6'6" wide receiver, and you know, Nolan Van Loo is a heck of a defensive back, but at about 5'6", you know, he loses that battle a lot of times on jump footballs. So, again, for us, it's a faceless opponent. We just know that they're in our way of continuing what we're doing, and we understand that if something goes wrong and we're not successful for this game, that there's another opportunity that we could be traveling week one, and we'd much rather be home. So.
He is Kevin Townsend, the head football coach with the Freeland Falcons football team. The Falcons are 3-1, and they travel to Bridgeport this Friday night. Kevin, thank you so much for making the time this week. Always good to have you on the show. I think this is like your fifth appearance or something like that. And I don't know what your record is on the show, but I was talking with John Blackstock. I told him this is going to be his bounce back week after they lost to Clarkston last week. So hopefully we can send some A Duff Said Karma to Freeland this weekend.
I appreciate it. As always, it's a blast talking to you. You're a kind gentleman and awesome to our neighborhood and my family. And I'll carve out time for you anytime.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Kevin. Back for a second straight week is the head football coach at Lake Orion High School, John Blackstock. Now, Coach, when I talked to you earlier this week about you coming on to do the Lake Orion report, you texted me back and you said you weren't really sure if you were going to do this or not because you said these appearances for you were bad luck. Now, I have always said that there is a good luck element to being on this show because last year so many guests on the podcast went on to benefit from being on A Duff Said, except for you guys, and I'll explain. I had your team on right before you guys played West Bloomfield.
Yep.
Oh, good. I didn't lose you. You didn't hang up on me there.
No, I'm still here.
Now,
we're going to turn this luck around.
Exactly. This is going to be your bounce back week. And I maintain that you guys would have won that West Bloomfield game last season had it not been for the weather delay.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. There was a lot of things that go into that, right? Outstanding game. What was it, 4 or 5 overtimes? Instant classic for sure.
It was so good, you guys needed 2 days to give the fans yeah. what they want.
Absolutely.
And you were going to see West Bloomfield next week to close out the regular season. But this week, Farmington is coming to your place. Now, this is a crossover game from the OAA White. And the Falcons, they're still looking for their first win of the season. And you guys, like we just touched on, are looking to bounce back from last week's loss against Clarkston. So what are you hoping to see out of your Dragons this week?
Yeah, you know, we want to see them just be really resilient. And we talk about that a lot. We want to see them get back to what we had talked about trying to do last week, being really fundamental, you know, blocking, tackling, taking care of the ball on both sides and staying green or, you know, staying positive. And the Farmington group, I know that, you know, they might not have a win at this point, but they're an athletic group. They play hard and they'll do some things that, you know, that we have to deal with on both sides of the ball.
One of the things that we talked about last week is it's a lot easier to overlook mistakes when you get a win, but not so much when you lose 31-7 to a team like Clarkston. What are some things that you need to clean up with your group?
You know, defensively, we need to tackle better. I felt that really kind of for the last 2 weeks, we haven't tackled really well. We've tackled a bit high, which isn't effective or efficient. You know, offensively, we've got to find a way to get the ball in the end zone. We've been able to move the ball pretty well at times, but then, you know, have untimely turnovers and things like that that have kept us out of the end zone.
And looking at the schedule right now, like we talked about with Farmington, they're still looking for their first win of the season, and they've had some lopsided defeats. So is this kind of a game that you're looking at maybe having that breakout night for the offensive unit?
You know, I think we're going to approach it like every other game, that we're going to go in with a plan and really try to execute that plan. You know, we've played in some big games lately, especially last year, but we really try to just approach it with a philosophy of a nameless, faceless opponent. And not we talk to the kids a lot about not looking at the scoreboard, that the time, the quarter, the score doesn't matter. There's a style of play and a standard of play that we feel that we need to be at. And, you know, we haven't been at it, honestly, the last 2 weeks, you know, against UAD or against Clarkston. And we need to get ourselves to that level. So it's more about the standard that we set for ourselves than anything else right now.
What's kind of been the factors that have stalled out some of those drives for your offense?
You know, I think the main thing is turnovers. You know, just protecting the ball and turning it over, you know, anytime you do, it's untimely. And, that's really been the biggest thing, you know, finding a groove in the passing game is also something else that we need to do. You know, there's times in practice that, the passing game is really coming along and we're doing some good things, but it hasn't been consistent in games. You know, this week that's been a big focus for us. And, I like where we're headed with it. We're not there yet, but I like the kids' attitude and effort in terms of improving in that area.
Even though you guys only scored 7 points last week, you got 86 yards on the ground from your junior quarterback, Kyler Carson. He had a good performance. How would you rate where he is right now at that position at this point in the season?
You know, he's developing. You pointed out he's a junior. I don't think people understand the challenges that having a new quarterback, whether they're a junior, whether they're a senior that doesn't have a lot of experience of playing at that level, what a big step it is. And our other two guys, Drew Knieper and Dom Bruno, are all in the same boat. Just, you know, lacking some experience and trying to get them, all three of them, that experience.
This is going to be the last regular season home game on your schedule, and for your seniors, it's their last home game at Dragon Stadium. Now, you guys don't do a traditional senior night like so many other schools do around the country, but when you look at the contributions that these guys have made to your program, who are some of the guys that you're really sad to see go? And ultimately, what did this group mean to the program?
Yeah, you know, we don't do a senior night, I guess, in the traditional sense of, you know, introducing and announcing every senior with their name and number and running out onto the field before the game. Just because we felt like that took away from game preparation. And it's just, it's something that's we've really never done. Do we honor our seniors? Yeah, I think we honor our seniors really all year long. And knowing how important those guys are because of their experiences, but also because of the time and effort they've put in for, you know, at least 4 years, a lot of them, you know, 6 years with playing in the seventh and eighth grade or even beyond playing in the youth league. You know, it's hard to name a couple seniors because they're all always special, you know, from getting to know them at a young age. A lot of these guys I've had in middle school, you know, teaching in one of the middle schools here in Lake Orion. But, you know, a couple of them that I guess would stand out are Henry Balicki and Sergio Figueroa, Connor Compton, Cade Manzo, Brock Iwanski, Alario Marcou. TK Fikes has really come on this year and had a great year as a senior. Jake McCaffrey, Mitch DeBrinket, absolutely, has put in a ton of work. You know, there's a lot of them that, and I don't want to hurt their feelings by not naming them, but I could run right down the list and tell stories about each one of them about how special they are, not only to me and other coaches, but, you know, the entire program. You know, this last home regular game isn't the sad one. You know, it's when you lose in the playoffs and that realization that was the last time a lot of those guys are going to play and the last opportunity that we as coaches get to work with those guys. I don't think people really understand the bonds that are built at practice and how much fun, you know, we as coaches have at practice developing that relationship with the guys and in the off-season program as well.
Given the way this season has been structured, you guys are for sure going to be back in the playoffs. How thrilled are you for this group that they are getting that opportunity to be in the playoffs for that to be their last game as Lake Orion Dragons?
Yeah, absolutely excited. You know, I know it's I don't know if controversial is the right word, but I know that there's kind of two different camps out there right now of should Michigan high school football have the qualification to get into the playoffs or should everyone be allowed? And, you know, I think the longer I've coached, my philosophy on that has changed. I'm not afraid to say that I think everyone should be allowed into the playoffs for a few different reasons. Number one, so that every team, every kid gets that opportunity to prepare for a playoff game. You know, things change when it becomes the playoffs. That things tighten up a little bit more and become a little bit more serious. And I think it would help with some scheduling, you know, where people aren't running. I don't want to say running from people, but, you know, they're trying to build schedules to ensure that they get 6 wins in the old system. And now they have made some modifications. I still think there's some dodging of scheduling games to ensure that they're going to have wins on their schedule to be seated higher in their district. So I think allowing everybody in is just a good thing. I know there's that old school mentality still out there of, you know, you have to qualify for it. You know, really we're the only sport in Michigan that has to qualify. And I think there's a lot of things that go into that, like the scheduling and, you know, sometimes guys get banged up early in the season and they're back at the end of the season and they weren't able to qualify because of that. I'm all for all teams qualifying for the playoffs and giving everybody that opportunity, that experience.
And just looking at your schedule right now, you've already played the fourth ranked team in Division I, and you're going to see another good D1 quality opponent next week to close out the season. So I think from that standpoint, you definitely have the qualifiers, even though everybody's getting in anyway. What did you get out of this schedule that's going to make you guys ready when that test comes in a couple of weeks?
Well, yeah, and I think if, you know, you look at the schedule that we would have had in a nine-game season if things hadn't been cut short, you know, you throw in there Macomb, Dakota, and you throw in Utica Eisenhower from the MAC. Like, we go and schedule people, and we do that because our kids want to play the best, and we want to compete against the best. You know, what's our schedule do for us each year? If you do get to qualify and get in the playoffs, it prepares you, because based on our schedule, you're going to see teams as good as the people we've played, but you're really not going to see teams that are a whole lot better. There's not a whole lot better out there than Clarkson and West Bloomfield. Sure, there's teams that are comparable, and there are teams that might beat them on a given night because they might have played better on that night, but there's not teams that are better than Clarkson and West Bloomfield.
And you will see West Bloomfield next Friday. But first, you got to take care of business this Friday against Farmington. I wish you all the best. John Blackstock, thank you so much for making the time this week on the Lake Orion Report.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me.
And that's a wrap on episode 33 of A Duff Said. Special thanks to Kurt Richardson, Joe Spencer, Kevin Townsend, and John Blackstock for making the time this week. Episode 34 of A Duff Said will be dropping this Friday. My guest will be Freeland High School junior quarterback Bryson Huckabee. Until then, this is Duff Tyler reminding you that if Duff said it, must be true, because that's what a Duff said.